Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all.
Welcome to our 355th Think Again program. Think Again is produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organisation working for social change for about 28 years now. We're broadcasting live from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I'm Jennifer Burrell, your host today, and we have Dr. Charles Livingstone on the line today to talk about the so-called gambling reforms before federal parliament. Charles Livingstone is Associate Professor at Monash University in the School of Public Health and Preventive Medicine. Charles Livingstone is also head of the university's Gambling and Social Determinants Unit. I should add that Charles has a long and honourable history of gambling research, policy analysis, and campaigning for proper gambling regulation in this country, dating back to the 1990s. So over 30 years now. Welcome to the program, Charles. So firstly, can you tell us a bit about the bill, the gambling bill that was just passed this week, and a bit of the history that led up to it?
Yeah. So in 2023, the government established a committee of the House of Representatives to inquire into online gambling and its consequences. And Peter Murphy, a long-time Labor stalwart and new member for the seat down on the peninsula, was in charge of running that. So the committee was called the Murphy Committee. Now, what they had a membership consisting of every party and independents within the parliament in the lower house. And so it was a very interesting committee because it agreed on 31 unanimously agreed recommendations, which is almost unheard of in Australian politics.
Mm.
And they were focused on preventing the harm associated with online wagering. Interestingly, they started off by referring to the harms of problem gambling, but after they'd heard from people whose lives had been affected by that, they changed their terminology and started talking about people harmed by gambling. So that was an interesting and early revelation, I think, for many members of that committee. But, of course, we still hear people, including the Prime Minister, talk about problem gambling, and, of course, that implicitly blames the individual for having a problem. But anyway, So they made 31 recommendations. The most prominent of those, of course, was a ban on advertising. But there were many others, and I think the top three that most people in my line of work would agree on were the prohibition on advertising, a prohibition on inducements, and the establishment of a national regulator. Now, the government has acted quite half-heartedly on inducements and advertising, but does nothing about the national regulator and hasn't touched any of the other recommendations. So we're essentially left with a situation where what has been enacted is at best half-hearted and at worst mealy-mouthed.
Yes, and I guess I've obviously been following this quite closely, and what I'm gathering is there are a lot of restrictions on gambling, advertising, but they're very careful not to really make a difference. For example,
It's
quite gobsmacking that they've reduced it so you only can have 3 gambling adverts in an hour. Well, how crazy is that?
Yeah, it's fairly crazy. I mean, at the moment, apparently, the average is around 6 per hour. I'm not quite sure how the length of the advertisements is to be addressed either. The opposition managed to get the time during which 3 ads were permitted, only 3 ads were permitted, extended from 5 a.m. until 8:30 p.m. at night. But after 8:30 p.m., there's no restriction, so they can do whatever they like. And that includes during a game, a sporting game. So at the moment, the legislation specifies that for 15 minutes before a game and 15 minutes after a game and throughout the game, they're not allowed to have gambling ads.
I think it might be changed to 5 minutes after a game, but
no,
I'm not sure.
It was originally
Is it 15? Oh my! Anyway, it doesn't really matter, does it?
The opposition changed it.
But okay.
What it now means, though, is that after 8:30, they can show ads any time they want during breaks in play. So that means, you know, if somebody kicks a goal and there's a couple of minutes before they get ready to kick off again or throw it up again, rather. Or indeed kick off if it's an NRL game, they can show ads. So there's no restriction after 8:30.
It's ridiculous. And imagine with children, good luck getting your children to bed if they've started watching a game and say, okay, you've watched the first half or first quarter, time to go to bed now.
That's right. And there's no one who's going to be able to do that. We know that. We know that. Kids, and particularly when it gets into this time of the season where it's all, you know, finals, footy, et cetera, and very difficult. So, but more importantly, perhaps, during the overall season, I saw a story in The Age the other day where they'd calculated that this would mean that at least a third of televised football in both codes would be open slather for gambling.
Yeah, so that's AFL and NRL.
AFL and NRL, yes. And remember, gambling ads are also quite common amongst cricket and tennis matches. So, the reality is that if the goal, as the Prime Minister said, was to protect children from exposure to gambling promotions, then there's been a dismal failure and it hasn't achieved that at all.
It's just so disappointing. And as I said in the introduction, I know, you know, you've been campaigning, advocating, researching around this for 30 years plus. And I think you made a really good point in passing before that the industry loves to focus on the problem gambler, like there's something wrong with them, it's their own individual pathology. But the problem with any gambling that gives you the inducement and opportunity to gamble every few seconds or consecutively, that's what makes them addictive, basically. And there's, you know, where there's a lot of people who have died, you know, and suffered because they never had any other addiction in their life. And this product, whichever gambling product it is, was designed to keep people gambling for as long as possible and to induce problems, basically. So
exactly right.
I had a few, I just thought of a good game I could play. I've got a few. I watched our Prime Minister, Albanese, talking about the reforms on, I think it was on the 7:30 report. So I thought, can I put some of his arguments to you to see what you think? I'll leave the industry. Maybe I'll start with two industry ones. Well, the industry, again, says it's offering choice, wants to offer choice while protecting the vulnerable. So thank you for laughing. So can you explain why you laughed?
Well, that's exactly what the tobacco company said. I mean, they said they weren't advertising their products back in the day when they could. They weren't advertising their products to encourage people to take up smoking. They were advertising their products to give people a competitive advantage that they could choose which products they wanted. I mean, it's laughable. It was a complete nonsense then, and it can remain a complete nonsense. It's impossible to imagine that anyone who wants to put on a bet in Australia couldn't find how to do it without it being constantly bombarded with advertising. It is clearly intended to firstly normalise the activity and associate it with popular pastimes, including sport, and secondly, to encourage people to take benefits of it. And if you look at the way the advertising is set up, it's all about trying to trigger emotional reaction. So they don't talk much about the actual gambling. They talk about doing it with your mates. Or how, you know, if you look at sports bets advertisements, for example, it's about people wearing a four-person wingsuit or pretending that they're fighter pilots or something. But nothing to do with gambling. It's about building this sort of alleged social connectivity, which
it does the opposite,
you know,
usually.
It's exactly the opposite of what it does.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing, too, for me about choice is, we could translate what we're talking about, saying if you're inducing what you could call an addiction, compulsive behaviour, you're actually reducing choice If you were really interested in people having choice, you wouldn't be trying to induce them to have uncontrolled gambling that they have trouble controlling, some to the extent that they kill themselves because they think that they can't do it. So,
that's right.
So, I've got one other industry argument before I go to our Prime Minister. You will push gamblers to less caring and responsible sites offshore.
Well, anybody less caring and responsible, any responsible than the Australian gambling industry is hard to imagine. This is always a standard argument. It's always a standard argument of this industry. Wherever you look at it, they say it everywhere, and there's no evidence that it happens. I mean, sure, there are people who end up going offshore because they get spammed or they get some offer that looks great. And, you know, remember, if you see something that looks too good to be true, it probably is.
Mm-hmm.
And, I guess the best thing I can say about this is that some years ago, when Tony Abbott was Prime Minister, he appointed the former Premier of New South Wales to undertake an inquiry. This was Barry O'Farrell. And his task was to examine illegal offshore wagering operations in Australia, or illegal offshore gambling operations. And he did that, or he started to do that. But midway through that investigation, he suddenly changed tack. And he changed tack because all the evidence that he saw before him from researchers and from people with lived experience and so on was that the real problem was with the onshore licensed wagering companies who were exploiting people outrageously then, and still are, of course, but in those days it was really the Wild West. And most of his recommendations went to establishing a national consumer safety protection system to ensure that people weren't getting systematically ripped off as they had been previously. So, that code is still in effect. I mean, the Albanese government claims great credit for it, but to be perfectly honest, at least half of it was put in place by their predecessors, including, it must be said, the Abbott and subsequent government. So, they appointed Barry O'Farrell. I don't think you could claim that he was an enemy of gambling, since he ended up being head of a racing New South Wales at one point, I think. But the reality is that he was able to ascertain that the real problem was not with the illegal offshore operators, so-called, but rather with the legitimate operators licensed in Australia.
Yeah, and they love using the argument, but it's legal, but it's legal, but it shouldn't be legal. That's what we're trying to do something about. I'm going to put, our Prime Minister Albanese, just to give him, I won't do an imitation, but I'll give you the gist of his argument. So this has been the most significant reform in Australia on gambling.
The most significant reform? Well, firstly, that's not a very high bar. Secondly, I challenge that. I mean, the bar is so low that a well-heeled slug could get over it without too much difficulty.
Yeah, which isn't much of a great image to compare up against.
I don't mean to compare Mr. Albanese to a slug.
No,
but
you're saying that he's equivalent to what a slug could do.
Yes, it's nothing. It is nothing. It is almost less than nothing because it entrenches a system. And the window for these reforms opens rarely. And although I don't think anybody's going to go away and say, oh, this is enough, we can stop campaigning now or stop advocating for reform now, I don't think that's going to happen at all. But what I'm saying is, as you know, the window for political action on any issue is narrow and it closes fast.
That's right.
Have to wait until at least the next parliament, if not the one after, to try and see any new reforms put in place, unless something extraordinary happens.
It's just so frustrating. And I noticed that I glanced through The Age this morning. I didn't see one glance about gambling. So suddenly that's what they want. It's done. So I'll just remind our listeners, you're listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio on 855 on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Today we have Dr. Charles Livingston from Monash University on the line, and we're talking about the Piss Week, my words, gambling bill just passed by Federal Parliament. And I'm putting some arguments just to be balanced, like our federal government saying it's doing with this gambling so-called reforms. I'm giving Prime Minister Albanese, I'm putting his arguments forward for Charles to respond to. So he also said, the Prime Minister said on 7:30 report, that some people from a moral point of view want to ban all gambling. We're talking about problem gambling. So I think you already referred to that one. So
yeah, I mean, I think the issue here, though, is that there is this sort of sense out there that gambling is sort of some sort of innate right and that we've all got the right to gamble. Well, you know, maybe we do. And I don't think anyone is arguing on moral grounds that we should ban gambling.
It's a straw man, isn't it? They say,
Who's
saying banning gambling altogether?
Well, another thing that he's been saying is that, you know, he supports the right of people to have a punt and he's trying to stop so-called problem gambling, quote-unquote. But in reality, as you said, no one on the reforming side of the fence, so to speak, has argued for a prohibition on gambling. I mean, it would be an effective measure in some ways, but I'm not arguing for it. I never have. And neither has, for example, someone like Tim Costello.
Yeah, that's right.
Former Baptist minister who has been a strong advocate for many, many years, and I've never heard him argue for a prohibition on gambling.
Yeah.
And none of the reforms in the Murphy report would have implemented any prohibitions that would stop anybody from having a punt, if that's what they want to do.
So, and I love the way they even use the word have a punt or a flutter. They're sort of terminology that my dad would have used, and I'm not really that young either, so I don't know. I think their media and comms people need to redo their lines a little bit, because nobody's saying, oh, I want to go and have a flutter. I just never hear anyone say it. So
no, that's pretty unclear, yes.
And I guess, as we said before, is it's very neat to put people into two categories, normal gamblers and those, you know, people with that, you know, illness, problem gambling. No, these products are causing gambling problems in people who've never had them before or any addiction.
Yes. So. Well, they're very addictive products. I mean, particularly poker machines. And the one thing the Prime Minister is right about is that most harm in Australia is caused by poker machines. And for whatever reason, the federal government has decided that it's not going to touch them. I mean, I think the real reason is that back in 2010, as some of your listeners may recall, when Julia Gillard was in need of a majority, she did a deal with Andrew Wilkie and he insisted on a intervention into poker machine gambling called pre-commitment. Now, in the end, that was a bridge too far for them because the poker machine industry went berserk and threatened her government. And indeed, it is arguable that they were one of the major influences in her decline from power. But Albanese, I think, was leader of the House at the time, and I think he's been scarred by that experience. And I suspect he doesn't want to take on the gambling industry and its acolytes anymore.
Yes, and we'll get to the acolytes too. So I've only got a couple of other points. They were pretty vacuous, but so this is going back to our Prime Minister. I think we've already covered this one. Our response is to make sure we don't stop someone betting $5 for a flutter. So move on from that one.
Yeah.
Our priority is to that problem gamblers are protected. I think we covered that one. Tick.
Yeah.
And I think we've got the balance right. And the point, I'd like you to respond to that, but I'd like you to comment on the balance between what? What are the interested parties that we're getting a balance between?
Well, the interested parties are clearly the gambling operators who make billions every year, at least $7 billion at the moment.
Yeah.
And the others who embrace gambling because they get a cut of the action. And that obviously includes the broadcasters, Channels 7 and 9, who we are told are reliant upon gambling, wagering, advertising for their existence. We are told that this is an existential threat to them, which is, I think, spurious nonsense. But anyway, that's what they say. And, of course, the sporting bodies, to whom the broadcasters pay another pack of billions of dollars for their broadcast rights. So we just saw the NRL sign, I think, a five-year deal for $5.3 billion with Channel 9 and Foxtel and others. And at the moment, the AFL enjoys a $4.7 billion contract with Channel 7 and KO and others. So, you know, I mean, the money flows from those people who are unfortunate enough to have developed a gambling habit to the waging operators who then advertise through the networks and sponsor the sporting codes. Both the sporting codes are thought to be getting tens of millions, perhaps 60 million a year.
And probably saving them.
Yeah. What it's doing is they're getting a cut of the action, but they're also getting sponsorship money. Mm. For example, the AFL is sponsored by Sportsbet. So they're getting an undisclosed amount almost certainly equal to the amount that they're getting from their percentage of the bets that are placed on their game.
So it's a really lucrative revenue stream, and I think we've argued it years ago, even when the dangerous pokies were being introduced in the 1990s, that once you have this lucrative revenue stream, people become dependent on it, governments become addicted to it, and I guess what you're sort of really describing is a real corruption in bodies within, I think you've called, an ecosystem.
Yes. Well, I mean, and the other argument which Barbara Kinder from Southern Cross University made recently in the conversation is that, you know, and I've always argued that the reason the states got into pokies, New South Wales in the 1950s and the rest of us, as you say, in the 1990s, was because of the vertical fiscal imbalance, you know, and to hopefully not turn off too many of your listeners. But that's the problem we have in Australia, because the federal government has all the money because they have the taxing powers, and mm-hmm. the states have to spend big on lots of things. And until we fix that, the states are always going to be perpetually broke. And gambling money provides, you know, somewhere around $6 billion a year across all of the states, with the exception of WA. And that includes wagering money now, of course. So what we've got is a system where you can't suddenly turn off the tap without it being a major problem. But that brings me to another point, which is that no one is suggesting that we turn off the tap. All we're suggesting, I think, is that we should have reasonable reforms in place that stop the normalisation of gambling and allow people to watch the sporting broadcast, for example, without being bombarded with promotions. And if they are the sort of person who's, let's say, had a flutter in the past but has tried to stop gambling, we don't want them to be bombarded with inducements to gamble again targeted at them by these gambling operators.
Yeah, that's nicely wrapped up. We are coming to the end of the program, but before we finish, Charles, can you tell us what do you think needs to be done, and also adding to that, is there anything listeners can do?
Well, obviously, listeners are the most important people because they're the ones who's represented by politicians. I mean, what the industry has always been very good at is influencing politicians. But, you know, grassroots campaigns can also have that effect, particularly at a local level. So, you know, if everybody who listens to 3CR and is concerned about this issue writes to their local MP, that would be a number of people. And my sense is that we haven't actually gone that path so successfully so far. I mean, it's one thing to talk to ministers and, you know, try to persuade them by logic, but they don't listen to logic. They're interested in politics and emotion. And I think, you know, an upswell of opposition from the grassroots would be a good way forward. And what should happen? I mean, I think without a doubt, the minimum that we need are the three key pillars of the Murphy report. That is, a new national regulator, because the de facto national regulator at the moment, for all sorts of historical crazy reasons, is the Northern Territory. And that was shown to be ineffective and probably incompetent in the recent Four Corners program. Mm. We need the elimination of all forms of advertising, as recommended by Murphy. She agreed that it should be phased in over a period of time for broadcasters, but that it should be done instantly for social media. And we need all forms of inducement by gambling companies to end forthwith, which was also the recommendation of the Murphy Committee. So there's a bunch of other stuff that needs to be done as well, but those are the three key pillars of the Murphy reforms. And that would get us to a stage where we could start to regard ourselves as having a reasonable level of regulation. And remember, most of the countries we compare ourselves with have far better systems of regulation in place and have had them for some time now.
Yes. We are going to have to finish there. I'm sorry, that sounded like a whole new great topic. So it would be great to have you come back on again and talk about it again, and we can get this groundswell going, I think, Charles. So there's always hope. And some of these campaigns, some campaigns take 50 years, and that's the truth.
Well, if you look tobacco history. Tobacco did.
So thanks so much for coming on the program today and feeding us into your busy schedule at Monash University, Charles Livingston. And thank you for your long-term persistence researching, fighting for proper gambling regulation in Australia. And as usual, it's been incisive and enlightening.
Thank you, Jennifer. And thanks to the listeners for putting up with me.
A pleasure, I'm sure, for everyone. So just for a quick community announcement, there's an event about reclaiming our public spaces. It's called Cities for Everyone Beyond Neoliberal Urbanism, the Future of Public Space and Life. That's at Borderlands Cooperative, Saturday, August the 29th in Footscray, 30A Pickett Street, August the 29th. Thanks so much for supporting Think Again, listeners, by tuning into the program today. And if you'd like to send any comments about this program, please email borderlands.info@borderlandscooperative.net. Our programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and via the 3CR website. Meanwhile, to finish our program today, please enjoy Milk Umana by King Stingray. Milk Umana!
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.